roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's up, junkies? It's MMA Junkie Radio Mondays here on Sportscaster. That's right. I know we sprung it on you, but we'll explain. Don't worry. It's our regular Monday morning show. Like I've told you guys many times, we do a Monday and Thursday show on Sportscaster. That's what I've been telling you guys when we're obviously with you guys on a Wednesday. But we'll explain all that. Here we are for the next hour. We're stoked about it. Came together at the last minute, but we're going to have some fun. We're going to recap the most recent events that took place. Bellator had a couple shows. And, of course, the UFC out in Fight Island with Holm versus Aldana. Not to mention, we'll cover some of the latest news that's out there. Sometimes that's even one of the more funner aspects of the sport, those Twitter beefs. You know I'm into that drama. Plus, we got some medicine to take. If we're in here wearing our shirts and bragging and boasting and cheering, then guess what? We'll also take our medicine. If you'll recall on Spinning Backlick last week, I was talking about the Los Angeles Lakers, and I'm proud of the boys, but they did take a loss yesterday. In fact, I think every team Goz and I cheer for lost yesterday, so we will take that medicine. We got a chat room that you can hang out with us. It's going to be a fun time here, MMA Junkie Radio Mondays on Sportscaster. Buckle up, folks. Here we go.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
All right, so I am Gorgeous George from MMA Junkie Radio, and that's The Goz. We've been doing this for a long time on Sportscaster now, probably about 2-3 years, depending on what time kind of timeline you want to give us from our first watch-along to now our consistent presence, and it's going to be even more consistent. So how you doing, Goz?
Good. Well, I'm doing all right. As you mentioned before, I've been a little bit of a curse this weekend, a horrible one. So I'm scared what's next, but I'm alive. I'm good. I'm healthy.
Yeah, everybody that says 2020, talk about 10-4-20. That's right. October 4th was not our day. We'll get that out of the way real quick. What we're talking about is waking up to Manchester United at home against Tottenham. They got squashed 6-1. 6-1 in soccer. That's like losing 42-7, I guess, if we're going to just go by touchdowns. If your NFL squad or your high school or your college, whatever you cheer for, everybody cheers for football. If you lose 42-7, I mean you're walking out in the third quarter hiding your face, right?
Right. Yeah. So,
thanks for hanging out, Goz. You plan on co-hosting today or
what?
I said thanks for hanging out. Do you plan on co-hosting today? I lobbed it up for you there.
Oh, I've no. I thought you just froze. I heard your email that you never turn off, so I thought something had happened.
Okay. Well, anyway, our team sucked. And then our football team, the Washington football team and the San Francisco 49ers, they took losses. And then the Lakers, who have been the safest bet around, so safe that they were like minus 10 going into the game. So the big question was, should I lay the points or not? You know, I mean, we're going to win. Should I just lay the points? And is it going to go over Or is this going to be a low-scoring game? Hell no. Miami beat us. They didn't even need the points. So congrats to them.
Our dog was a little sick as well. Our MMA, at least my MMA picks, were garbage. It was nonstop, dude. Nonstop. It was a beating this weekend.
How'd you do in staff picks?
Officially on staff picks, I don't know. But what I had assumed was my lock was the main event, and I completely called that fight wrong.
You ain't lying. In fact, let's start right there, Goes. Let's get into the MMA. Who says that? Ed Soares is one of the guys that says it, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the foreigners say into the MMA. We love
it. I like it.
Huh?
I like it, though.
Yeah, me too. I say it a lot, too. All right, so Irene Aldana goes and Holly Holm. That was the main event. In fact, before I really jump into that, let me just say one thing real quick. Jermaine Durandamy and Juliana Pena had a very important fight going into prior to the main event. These are all 135-pounders. These are all bantamweights. Now, we know Amanda Nunes rules the division. She's high atop a mountain. And there's no one that's even like, you know, on that last step of the mountain where she can reach up, pull herself up, and then get face-to-face with Nunes and go, I'm next. Everyone's way below. That's how great Nunes is. I mean, you got to honestly just go and go and go in some sort of a circular motion and then climb and rest for the night before you get to that mountain. But there was two ladies that had been that were kind of primed to possibly be future opponents for Amanda Nunes. One was Juliana Pena, who, if you recall, said, I'm the clear-cut choice or something along the lines. Remember that week, last week?
Yeah.
And we were like, take it easy. And then Irene Aldana, who had won two in a row, four of her last five, and had just knocked out the previously undefeated Ketlin Vera. So if this was set up for Aldana, by the way. She was fighting Holly Holm, but still, Juliana Pena, who only has one loss in the UFC going into this fight, and is very marketable because she's a former Ultimate Fighter winner. If she had won and won impressively, and then Aldana loses, you're looking at the next contender for the 135-pound belt for Amanda Nunes. Now, I don't want you guys to get confused because I know a lot of you are going, hold on a second. Isn't Amanda fighting in December? Yeah, but she's also the featherweight champ. She's fighting Megan Anderson in December, so she's defending the 145-pound belt. She's a champ. And so we're talking about the 135-pound division. So Juliana Pena fights Jermaine Durandamy, and I'll go through it quick. Jermaine wins round one. Juliana wins round two. In round three, it had been established. Juliana can get the fight to the ground. Good chance she can win this fight, even if it's just riding time. You know, what we call riding time is getting the takedown and just being on top. And then if Jermaine can keep the fight standing, she'll probably win. We get to round three. And tying it into what Ghost says, as far as like we just took a bath, man, as far as our gambling picks, this was one of them for me that could have been ugly because Juliana Pena did get the takedown in round three. She was not only had gotten the takedown, but if you'll notice, Ghost, she was over her knees almost like in a mounted position, granted with her head tucked in. But Juliana Pena, whose strength is grappling, we just thought if she can just stay calm and get out of that choke, she'll be on top, and she'll probably ride herself to a win. Not an impressive win, not a statement win, but a win and really put the pressure on Aldana in the next fight. That did not happen. Goes, did you even imagine GDR by submission? That would have made us some money.
No, not at all. That's the thing is, like, when you think about it, it was a great performance for both girls who won, Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamy. What it does, though, is it completely throws that division off. And it's not because they have a lot of girls. It's not like featherweight where there's just not that many options. It's just the champ has been so dominant that it leaves everybody with limited options. So for Durandamy to get that type of win, good on her. Great showing a different type of skill set that we weren't really sure she had.
It looked nice too, right? The choke. I mean, it really great technique and great torque and good for her, man.
But if you're the matchmaker for this division, you're probably pulling your hair out right now because the matchmaker's never going to come out and say, I want this person to win or I want that. But there's a little bit of storytelling that goes on, and they're hoping that, okay, this victory here can put this person in this position because you got to create future cards. This completely derailed all of that.
Yeah. You know, I will say this. Jermaine Durandam is a former champ. She's the former featherweight champ, if you'll recall. And Holly Holmes, the former bantamweight champ. So they've won some gold. They're pretty popular ladies. Holly Holmes, a former boxing champion. GDR, a police woman in her native Netherlands. Very marketable ladies, but they've kind of had their shot. Juliana Pena, you know, she's the Venezuelan vixen. I mentioned she was the Ultimate Fighter winner before. And then you even have Irene Aldana, who has, you know, had a beautiful KO over Caitlin Vera, and she's from Mexico. And you know, I just know the UFC wants to have themselves a true Mexican champion. No disrespect, obviously, to the Cejudos and Cain Velasquez's of the world. But I'm talking about somebody born in Mexico, living in Mexico, somebody that Mexico will really get behind. And I can say this, man. I'll tell you why. Not because I'm going to play the Mexican card, but because I saw it in the 90s with Oscar De La Hoya and Julio Cesar Chavez. De La Hoya was a Mexican-American, a proud one. But he was hated in Mexico because they had their own guy, Julio Cesar Chavez. I mean, he wasn't loved at all, right, guys?
Not really. Not in Mexico. I mean, it's really, really hard. Like, now they have Canelo Alvarez, you know, like, but Canelo Alvarez, for those of you who weren't born in that generation, Canelo Alvarez is basically what Julio Cesar Chavez was back in the day. Only I don't know that he's as beloved yet as Julio Cesar Chavez was. Like, that guy was a god to them.
Yeah, man. That guy packed, I think it was Greg Haugen, 100,000 in a stadium in Mexico against Greg Haugen. Azteca Stadium goes. We didn't even think about it, but that's the one that has like an 8,000 foot altitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
12 rounds of boxing at 8,000 feet altitude? Man, brutal. But folks, so the UFC had plenty of hands to play, but yeah, I think they wanted to probably give either Pena or Aldana that shot. Probably more than likely Aldana. She's the one featured in the main event. She's the one that's just been fighting more frequently. Pena became a mother a few years ago, and she also took some time off after a difficult loss to Valentina Shevchenko. So she's really only 1-1 in her last 3 years. But again, the fighters that come off the Ultimate Fighter, especially the ones that win, they come with a lot of hype. So let's get back to the fight. Oh, and by the way, let me insert something real fast. In our intro, I neglected to say, Eric Nixick, the Extreme Couture general manager and coach to fighters like Francis Ngannou, Joseph Benavidez, Dan Ige, he'll stop by and we'll talk to him for a little while. So he'll be our guest today. So in the Pena fight, Pena gets that takedown. If she clears her head, I mean, from what I saw in round two, she probably stays on top, gets that decision, and then all of a sudden there's more pressure on Aldana. Of course, as you all know by now, Juliana Pena got submitted by Jermaine Durandamy. Great clutch submission by Jermaine Durandamy. And so Jermaine Durandamy, nicest lady in the world, she gets up there and she says, hey, I haven't gone away. I haven't gone anywhere. You know, something along the lines, I'd love to fight for a title again. But hey, you know, I mean, just keeping it real. Shout out to all the first responders. And that's why, if you heard it and you thought, well, that was nice. She is a first responder. So she did everything she could have done. And honestly, when she was just standing there, just striking with her hands and feet, I mean, she's one hell of a polished striker.
Mm-hmm. She can crack, and her skill set is legit. The problem is Amanda Nunes is just so far and above and beyond everybody else right now. Juliana Pena, what she did was present the whole argument of, well, if Juliana could get her down, maybe, you know, that's Juliana's world, and that's what kind of sells fights a little bit, right? Especially when you have a dominant champ. So when you look at Juliana Pena's performance, to me, she didn't look that bad, but I think there was a little bit of ring rust involved here, because either that or, you know, father time or mother time or whatever you want to call it, that might have caught up to her a little bit too, you know? You never know, but
probably rust.
I'd like to see Juliana Pena get right back in there and do it again, because she can be talented, and she can be a bit of a bully in that cage, and that's what you need against some of these top girls. But it's nothing to take away from Durandamy's performance. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah, it was, especially that clutch submission. So now we'll skip through the co-main event, and then we'll come back to it in a little while. But now let's get to the main event, because it's relevant to what we're talking about here, the 135-pound division. That's the women's bantamweight division. Now we have Holly Holm versus Irene Aldana. And Goz mentioned Mother Time. Jermaine Durandamy's 36. Holly Holm, I believe, 38, 39. And part of the storylines were, well, you know, they're getting older. You know, like, what's going to happen here? Do they still have the same zest, not just for life, but for fighting, you know, like when they were champs and when they were younger? And Irene Aldana has just been really, really, like coming. I mean, she's just streaking. She has a lot of momentum. And then she's coming off that huge win over Vieira. One thing did concern me, though, Goz. I know she's a slow starter, but she had the coronavirus. If you'll recall, that's what delayed the fight. It should have happened like a couple months ago. And about two rounds in, I'm just thinking, man, I wonder if there's some residual effects. What's happening here? Because she's just not doing much. I haven't been as frustrated in a fighter and a game plan as I was in Irene Aldana. And it's been a while. Like, you know, we always joke about throwing the remote through a TV. I would never do it. But I guess if there was ever a time that I was getting close again, it was that one. Yeah, I had a little bit of money tied into it, some parlays, but that wasn't bugging me. It was just somebody leaving that huge of an opportunity go by the wayside. Goes, she was staying away from Holly's power hand. So Holly, she kept circling to her left, and she just kept chasing her and chasing her and chasing her in a circle. And every so often when she would get close, rather than using angles to cut the cage, when she would get close, Holly would just throw some sort of a sidekick or blitz her or just explode with one punch, you know, either her straight or a jab or something. And Irene, it almost looked like Irene Aldana was brought into Holly's camp to just give her some work. And Holly was showing off. I mean, I couldn't believe that it over and over she kept doing the same thing in such a huge fight, man. This could have been Irene Aldana's shot if she would have won. She blew it, especially with Pena out of the way.
Yeah, the one thing that I could take out of this fight when I watched it, and then I watched it again last night, she was just, to me, and it goes back to kind of what you were saying about COVID-19, to me, Irene Aldana looked lethargic. She just, every time she wanted to do something, Holly was out of the way a second before. Or she would react to things that Holly did just a slight millisecond late. She just looked lethargic to me. She just didn't, like somebody that just had gotten out of bed or didn't get a chance to warm up or something. Like, it just wasn't there. It wasn't the normal Irene Aldana. And I think when that happens, you have to either look towards injury or, like you said, maybe there are lasting effects from this COVID-19 that may have hit her, because she just didn't seem to be there, which is very odd, because when you go back to all her other fights, that's the one thing that you can always count on, is she shows up. Like, she's tough. She's in the game. She knows what she's doing. She didn't have any of that. Now, I don't want to be a jerk. Holly Holm looked great. Holly Holm did a lot of things in this fight that I think we all wished would have happened. It's almost like her complete evolution happened overnight in one fight versus little by little from fight to fight. If she could fight all of her fights the way she did this one, which Irene Aldana is very tough, so it's not like you could say, oh, it's because it was Irene Aldana. No, that ain't true. If she could fight this fight the way she, all the other fights the way she did this one, her record would be way better. And she planted the seed for future fights that now fighters have to think, man, this girl's kind of got a complete package going on here. She's going to be tough. The question is that the problem is Holly Holm has not been able to be consistent. And that's the thing that you would fear going into the next fight is it going to be this Holly Holm or is it going to be another one?
Yeah, she's 4-5 across two divisions. Remember, she's been mixing in a lot of bantamweight work, featherweight work with bantamweight work, pretty evenly split, actually. She is 3-1 in her last four bantamweight fights, but one of them was over 3 years ago. the Betch-Kohea fight. The others have been recent enough that we have to give her credit. Yes, she looked awesome. How she didn't get a bonus is beyond me. Mm-hmm. I guess if Irene Aldana puts up a fight, maybe they share fight of the night. But I thought De Castro and Felipe had shared, you know, what could have been a fight of the night. They didn't get it either. But regardless, I thought she looked great. I mean, that was a ton of energy. Even at the end, she just went for it. She mixed in some wrestling. She did some kickboxing, obviously. We mentioned her kicks. She threw her hands a lot more. Those blitz attacks were nice. She just beat Irene Aldana pillar to post, man. What I think there was a 10-8 too. I'm pretty sure I heard at least 250-44s, and I got their ages correct. Condit, 36. Durandamy, 36. Holm, 38. How many journalists, goes, do you think had their pseudo papers ready to go, turned in, titled, is this the end of Holm? Should Dana have a conversation with GDR? You know, should Condit hang them up? I'm not even saying that thought didn't enter my mind, just because of what we've been seeing the last couple of weeks with Diego and Woodley and a few others. Like, hey, you know, do they still have gas left in the tank or whatever? But all three looked outstanding. Holm, I can't say enough about. Did that get her a title shot? I don't know, because Jermaine Durandamy looked pretty good. She actually got the finish. Holm, across five rounds, probably put in more impressive work. She didn't lose a round, whereas Jermaine Durandamy did. Of course, there's always Aspen Ladd, who's recovering from a knee injury, but she's got to be at least halfway through. And remember, Amanda doesn't even fight till December in a whole other division, so she won't even be defending bantamweight till probably the spring of 2021. Maybe Aspen Ladd can get back in there. But, wow, a lot to unpack there, man, with the bantamweight division.
And you have to remember, Amanda is – a newly mom, right? So who knows after this fight what she's going to want to do. If she's going to want to take a little time off and, you know, hang out with a new baby. We don't know. So really, everything's up for grabs.
Well, she's fighting Megan in December, but if you're talking about after that, she did post and say that she's going to be a busy, I think she even said busy mama in 2021. So hopefully that means she'll be, that had to be a shout out to the bantamweights. Mm. And that had to be some sort of a message to both of the winners saying, hey, look, I see you, and I plan on defending sometime soon. She's been the one that's broken through a little bit and been able to do both. I'm not against fighters going to become champions in multiple weight divisions. I'm just against the fact that they can't defend. Most of them don't defend them both, and it winds up stalling one or the other division. So I've never been a big fan, but I don't even consider women's featherweight a division. It's like four or five gals. Maybe they've signed a few more. Maybe they're up to like eight. But if there was ever a division you could maybe pull it off, it's that one. So God bless her. She's the GOAT. She can do whatever she wants. And congrats to her and her partner, Nina Ansaroff. They did have a baby about less than a month ago, probably like 2 weeks. 2 weeks old is the baby. Heck, I don't even know if it's a boy or a girl, or a baby name. But again, congrats to both of them. But back to Holly Holm, 38 years old, goes. I mean, I know she became a world champ once and blasted Ronda Rousey, but I don't think I've ever seen her more complete and well-rounded. And she also just had this confidence too.
Yeah, I mean, even if you go back to the Ronda Rousey victory, like, she did go to the ground with Ronda for a little bit, you know, so.
It was like a hot potato. It was like, yee! You know, and then she got
hit. Yeah, but she did go down there. So to me, that's probably always going to be her best performance, but this one was pretty amazing. She just blended everything that she could do all into one.
Yeah. All right, so look, we have Eric Nixon coming up in about 8 minutes. Let's talk about the rest of the card. I'll blast through it fast, and then whatever stands out to you that you want to set your sights on, let's do it. Okay, so we covered the main event. Holly Holm defeated Irene Aldana. She beat her via decision. And in the co-main event, we had Carlos Felipe. I know many of you are like, who? Carlos Felipe from Brazil versus Jorgen De Castro. Some of you might be saying you, who there as well, but I remember Jorgen. These two guys fought a pretty entertaining fight, Goes. They were heavyweights, but they were the pudgy type heavyweights. However, they showed me you don't want none from either one of these guys. Heck, I might pick some big old muscular dudes to mess with before I mess with these guys. They kind of almost had not endless cardio because they were tired at the end, but still, Goes, that was one hell of a pace they had.
DeCastro had some nasty leg kicks that I don't understand why they weren't having any effect. He would throw them, you would hear the thud. Remember, in MMA, guys, when you hear the slap, it's not really as impressive as the thud. The slap does not hurt as much as the thud. These were thuds over and over and over, and they just weren't having any effect. And you're right. I don't want to say that they had endless cardio because they had to have been tired. Not what you would consider for the amount of strikes they were throwing, and they were kind of talking trash. It was just a fun fight. It really was fun.
I really loved it. That is my type of fight. They both went out there. Felipe was even adding to it by talking some smack. He had some Diaz brother moments. You know, he's like, "Come on, let's go." He had some Bobby Green moments where he was letting them know that had no effect. Goes is talking about those leg kicks. Same thing. He was laughing at him like, "Nice try, but that ain't stopping me. Then he had a Max Holloway moment. Remember when he told Ricardo Lamas, "Let's get down" at the very end? And Jorgen said, "All right, let's do it." And then Jorgen retreated. But either way, it was a really, really fun fight. I thought for sure they locked up 50 Gs because heavyweights throwing that kind of leather, those types of kicks. I mean, they went to the body, they went to the head, they went to the legs, and they did not stop. I thought they should have got their 50 Gs, but they didn't. In the end, Carlos Felipe was the winner. But what Carlos Felipe did was he registered. So now if I go on to the MMA Junkie app and it says Felipe subs in for or signs on to fight fill in the blank or whoever, right away I'm like, this, yes.
You're more excited.
That's the fighter that I want to see. He made me remember him. You know, there's a lot of fighters that fought on Saturday. You're like, yeah, let me know when he fight again, you know. But there was nothing there. And this guy got me excited about his next fight.
Yeah, I mean, you could say the same thing about Jorgen DeCastro, right, if you're not too familiar with him. He's a tough out. He really is. So both guys planted the seed for future fights. But I don't know that either guy really is telling the world, "I got something for the champ." But what they are is very entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. Jorgen, we got to know because we did an off-guard interview with him at Extreme Couture. Could not have been a nicer guy, but now he's lost two in a row. He lost to Greg Hardy and he lost to Carlos Felipe, except my man's coming to fight. I think he'll get that third fight. I think win or lose, he's the type of guy that I think the UFC is willing to give that every last chance to, but he's going to have to polish up a few things. Both guys, look. There's a lot of guys that can throw like that and keep up a good pace, but they also have some sort of a ground game. Carlos Felipe is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. Jorgen was trying to get a takedown there at the end, but I'm just interested to see how well-rounded they are. We'll get that when we see him against more opponents. Kyler Phillips defeated Cameron Else, and Dusko Todorovic defeated Daquan Townsend. That rounds out the main card, and on the undercard, we'll start from the bottom. Luigi Vandramini defeated Jessen Ayari. Casey Kenny defeated Helai Alatang. Luma Lukbungmi defeated Jin Yu Fry. Nasruddin Imamov, holy cow, defeated Jordan Williams. Charles Jourdain defeated Josh Koulibal. And Carlos Condit, the natural-born killer, he defeated Court McGee 30-27 across the board. Goes, what stood out to you?
Man, I got to go with my guy, Carlos Condit. That was fun to see him back. Fun to see that scowl on his face. I don't know how to describe this. It was a good performance for him. I don't know that you look at him and say, Carlos Condit's back. But the best Carlos Condit, I think, showed up that night, which I appreciate. It shows that he's putting in time. He's taking everything serious, and it was a good fight for him, you know, and I wouldn't mind seeing him step up the level of competition and fighting someone else. Is he going to be threatening for a title anytime soon? No, I think maybe those days are over, but he's still competitive and it's still fun. And when you look at the people that are out there that he has history with, it would be fun to do a couple rematches here and there. With obviously what stands out for me is if for some reason they're able to get Nick Diaz to come back, well, shit, that there's a little bit of unfinished business there. And another guy that we always talk about, should he ever come back, Dan Hardy, you could always do that one again. You know, those are like the type of fights that I want to see. I'm not so sure we want to throw Carlos Condit to the wolves anymore.
Matt Brown was on social media. He was saying, yeah, hey, we were supposed to fight once. Let's get to this. So, yeah, there's a lot of those veterans, and throw in Diego Sanchez as well, that have plenty of gas left in the tank, and they're not like novelty matches. They're not, you know, clear past their prime matches. Kind of like what we saw with Miletic and Michael Second to None, two guys in their 50s, or even Hoyce and Ken. No, it's nothing like that. It's actually fights that would be pretty competitive. They would look a step below their prime probably, but it would still be very, very entertaining. There would still be some violence, you know, and they're relevant names. And those are the names you put on a card to give the younger guys some shine. Sometimes yeah. You fight the guys and give them some shine. Sometimes you're just on the card to give some of the younger cards some shine. But people will buy tickets still, you know, and that's what makes them important. When there's a clear decline or when they've retired and then they come back way years later, then it might not work. So some might say, well, that's what Dan Hardy is. No, well, Dan Hardy is also a very popular announcer. And that's why his name is still very, very relevant. He does a lot of great work analyzing fights pre and post. And then, of course, he actually works as a broadcaster. So anyway, let me go over the bonuses here. The bonuses went to, this is $50,000 each, no fight of the night. Jermaine de Randamie, Kyler Phillips, Dusker Todorovic, and Luigi Van Dramini. Also, he's back. My consigliere goes, he's right. Galley from Toronto goes, corrected me. Charles Jourdain and Josh Koulibal was a draw. It was a draw. I remember that. Koulibal, here's what I remember. Was a big dog in that fight, goes, and I took him too. I took him. And that's why I know it hurts, because it would have been a nice hit for me and a lot of people that I know. Jourdain was like minus 450, and but Koulibal, I thought he won, man. Anyway, there's your card, and now we're going to get to our guest of the day, the Extreme Couture general manager and also coach to fighters like Francis Ngannou, Joseph Benavidez, Jessica Ai, and my man Dan Ige, Eric Nixon.
The Sneak is a true crime podcast from For the Win in USA Today, and this season is on a surfing champion whose life took a violent, tragic turn.
Within 30 seconds, they're both dead.
The Sneak, Murders at Whiskey Creek, is out July 29th, wherever you get podcasts.
What's up, Big E? How you doing?
Good, brother. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Okay.
Welcome to MMA Junkie Radio Mondays on Sportscaster. Great to have you. What kind of a hat you rocking there? Is that the San Diego Padres?
It's my old school Padres lid. It's been a while since I could bust it out.
Is that your squid? Is that your squad, or I don't know. For some reason, yeah, I would have thought your baseball team would be like the Dodgers or somebody in Cali, closer to the SoCal area.
No, we were season ticket holders for a number of years, and my folks lived out there. We had Chargers and Padres tickets for the longest time. But you know, back when Ken Caminiti was there, that was my guy, and Hoffman and those guys. So yeah, Tony Gwynn, can't leave him out.
Tony Gwynn, man, if that guy sheds 20 pounds, he might have been the greatest ever. I mean, he was a Golden Glover for like 10 years straight. He never hit less than 300 for probably 15 years straight. Very well-rounded player, but boy, he did it for us pudgy guys.
Yeah, no, the guy can rake.
Hey, yeah. Eric, how come at no point did you say, hey, you're not chubby, come on. You just kind of went with it.
He just kept going. So I was trying to, I didn't want to interrupt him while he was talking.
Okay. You know what? He couldn't even
say, well, I haven't seen you guys because of the pandemic, or he saw me a week ago. He could have thrown me a bone and said, come on, G, I saw you lose 15. You look good. You're not.
I did. That was the first thing I said to you. I said, man, you look good. You lost weight. And then you were talking to Marquardt.
All right. So Eric, let's catch up a little bit, man. Well, first of all, how do you even like coaching during the pandemic? Now it's not one fight you can talk about. Guys have had multiple fights. You've had wins. You've had losses. But compare that to the last decade of non-pandemic competition that you've been involved with.
I kind of liked it, to be honest with you. It's almost kind of the microcosm of the fight game, man. You have to adapt and overcome. So when new things get thrown your way, it's up to us to find a way to make it work. We had to be creative. We had to try to understand, like, hey, it's going to be different without a crowd. So how do we speak to the judges? How do you speak to your fighters? All these little things, like, it kind of was. I thought it was fun. It was a way to try to be creative again. I felt like a lot of the camps were more boxing oriented. I would say like you was more individualized. So you're bringing in training partners. You didn't really have the team environment that I really like, but at the same time, I saw a lot of value of doing things with more one-on-one stuff. So it was different, but I liked it actually.
And then update us as far as the Extreme Couture Gym. Obviously, I just said that I was there, so we know that you're open. But what I didn't do was I wasn't there for the whole practice to see. I mean, is it 100% back, or there's still some limitations on what guys can do? And then do you guys have any form of contract tracing? Kind of like, wait a minute, aren't you at so-and-so's gym most of the time? And didn't they have an outbreak? Like, are you guys connecting dots at all? Or did you guys just say, chale, let's fight?
No. Yeah. We were pretty diligent with everything. And, guys, to the guys' credit in the room, we had a couple guys that got it, and they were great in the fact of being good teammates. Once they knew they had it or a sign of it, they didn't come into the gym, which is quite uncharacteristic for a lot of our guys, because if you get ringworm or you might have staff, guys might try to sneak it in and get a training session in. Where I was very proud of the team, because they took this with a lot of consideration, understanding that a lot of people could be at risk if you brought that in. So I knew of three guys that got it. All three of them immediately isolated, and we didn't have any other outbreaks. And those guys got them in self incidences from their work. One works in a casino, one worked in a gym, and one got thought he had it via his sister, and he never did. They live in the same home, so he just decided to self isolate. So very proud of the team and the way they handled it. So we try to do our best on our end, due diligence, and encourage guys to go get tested as many times as possible. We as coaches and fighters are getting tested constantly. Thankfully for us, man, we haven't had like some crazy wild outbreak like some other gyms have had.
All right. And then I do want to ask you about some of your individual fighters. But first, I did want to go over a couple things. You had a pretty cool interaction there with one Teddy Atlas. He showed up to the gym. How was what was all that about? Was it random, or did you guys like seek him out? Did he seek you out? How did that come about?
Yeah, that was actually through Markel, Francis's manager, and Francis and Teddy have a little bit of a relationship already. And so Teddy was in town. His son is the scouting director for the Las Vegas Raiders. So his son now lives in Vegas. So Teddy's going to be making more trips out to Vegas. So he happened to be in town. They hit me up and said, hey, is it cool if you guys wanted to come in on a Sunday and get a little work in with Teddy Atlas? And man, I was like, yeah, of course. He's one of my idols, And so for me personally, Teddy kind of hit more of the coaching side, and understanding the timing with your family, when to say no to certain people. Like he spoke a lot of things that I see and I experience, but he helped me understand it a little bit more and how to package it, how to express my feelings to the fighters. It was absolutely gold. And then as far as the technique stuff goes, he sat and worked with Francis on like two or three little things. And it was literally like for 2 hours. So just the fine tuning of what some of the things that we're doing with Francis and how to be better. So it was an unbelievable interaction, man. I was blown away the whole time. I was trying not to be starstruck while we were there with him, but no, he was a great guy, and it was a great experience.
Eric, tell me a little bit about the new dynamic here in Las Vegas. Because of the pandemic, most of the cards are either Fight Island or they're here at the Apex. And what happens is fighters tend to just come out here for a couple weeks and stay. And what I've noticed is a lot of those fighters will come into Extreme Couture and get some work in. How does that work with those type of – can you give us some of the names that have come through? I saw Michael Johnson and a couple others. But do they – do most of their work at the PI and then come in for sparring sessions, hitting mitts? How does that dynamic work with the new little influx of talent that Vegas has been getting?
You know, for the most part, they just either hit myself up or one of the coaches at the gym and ask if there's a conflict there. Like, hey, is it okay if I come in? That actually happened with Johnny Walker. You know, he obviously fought Misha Cirkunov. They wrote us and wanted to see if it was okay if he came in and got some work. We reached out to Misha and made sure that he was okay with it. And then, of course, Misha said yes. And then now all of a sudden he's in his corner and helping him out. So we're seeing that quite a bit, especially with the PI and guys getting injuries. So they're going to the PI to get the rehab done. And then Forrest is sending guys over here to get some individual work done or possibly team. So it's been great for us. I just try to keep a constant line of open communication with my fighters, making sure that there's no conflict there. Guys, you know, you don't want to have somebody in there they might be fighting and they're not comfortable with. So as long as the team's cool with it and the guys in the room are cool with guys coming in, I think it's great for everybody. You know, they get experience like Aljamain Sterling and Marab's been in town and some great guys that you can come in and compete with and you know, see how you stack up with some of these top pros.
That synergy, the energy that you guys have there is, I don't see that at a lot of gyms. And one moment that I like to see that brings a lot of energy to the group is when the general's there, when Randy Couture is there, right? And he's on the mat and he's teaching things. You see the veterans who are used to being with him really soaking things in. And then you see even the younger generation getting a little starstruck. Can you give us an update on Randy? We know that he had that accident and suffered some injuries, but he seems to be pretty lively out there on social media and getting around a little bit more. How's he doing?
He's great. You know, he's Randy, man. He's Captain America. So he's doing good. He was in the gym a couple days ago. You know, he's still recovering from the rib injury, but anytime you can get Randy in the gym, you know, it's like going to college, man. He's going to show you some things that you never really expected or knew. And one little detail can ultimately change your game. And, so anytime he's in the room, it's always a blessing for us. But we got to keep him off the ATVs, man. He's getting old. He's not as sprite as he used to be. So I remember when he had his heart attack. You know, we're all freaking out, and then he calls me. He calls me like 2 hours later. And I'm like, why? What are you calling me for? Like, you just had a heart attack. He's like, oh hey, there's some gym equipment at Unbreakable. It's like really nice stuff. They're gonna send it over, and I just want to let you know. So we need to make some room for gym equipment. I was like, dude, you just had a heart attack. Like, don't worry about the gym equipment right now. We'll get everything under control. So typical Randy stuff right there.
You know, when you go back to Randy Couture's era, some of the training camps and all that, like back then people don't realize just how funny that would be to people today, the way they would do those things. But the one thing that I think was a little different back then was coaches kind of kept to themselves. And now what I've seen, and I've actually seen this a lot with you as well, is coaches talk to each other. There's an open line of communication. There's not really that standoff. I mean, there are some that are a little standoffish, but for the most part, you seem very eager to learn from other coaches and they seem eager to learn from you. Can you talk about that new dynamic between coaches now?
Yeah, I think you see that quite a bit on the road. You know, we spend a lot of time in airports and hotels, at the venues. And, you know, I want to make sure that I'm open to where, you know, I'm trying to smile and say hello to people. So I think that allows people to feel like I'm approachable. You know, I also like the fact of, like, you know, Saif, Saud, I really don't know him very well. He seems kind of like closed off and tough. And man, like one day when Dan fought in Houston, you know, he came up to me and you know, I'm not looking for compliments. I'm looking for things he might see that for us to do better, or some little bit of constructive criticism. And I appreciate when coaches do that. you know, because it's not about my ego. It's about, you know, my fighter and how we can become better. And if he saw something maybe that I missed and he's willing enough to come up and approach me and tell me, hey, I see the X, Y, and Z, man, I really appreciate those kind of things, you know, and I think it goes a long way and tells you, speaks volumes about the coach. And I think it speaks volumes about the guys that are willing to put their ego aside and listen and learn. And then I have a really good relationship with Henry Hooft, man. I talk to him quite a bit. When he's in town, we try to go get coffee or meet up. And, you know, he's a guy that expressed a lot of interest in me and for no reason at all. Like, he's not going to gain anything out of it. But he's always been a guy that wants to see me succeed in my coaching career and my fighters. He's always been super supportive of me for no reason other than he's a nice guy. And I think that I'm a nice guy, too. So you're starting to see a lot of that camaraderie amongst certain coaches. And I appreciate it, man, because, you know, the coaching game's tough, right? You know, we read a lot about how the fighters don't get paid what they deserve. Well, think that the coaches are only going to get 5 or 10% of what those fighters are getting. So it's really tough to maintain this career and keep your family afloat. So a lot of times I think we feed off each other or bounce stuff off each other, just more of a support system.
What do you coaches think of the criticism you see online, especially from media? Are you guys, would you say collectively, are pretty thick-skinned or behind the scenes? You don't have to name any names. Do some take it to heart? Because I'm starting to notice a lot of the coaches are a little bit sensitive, kind of like how the fighters are, and I wish we could change that a little bit. And I have an explanation for that, but let me let you answer first.
I don't know. I don't really follow too much of that stuff, to be quite honest with you. You know, I think I get a little bit more defensive of guys that I know. You know, like even the Mark Montoya situation with Anthony Smith, you know, I feel like, you know, he got kind of, you know, hit pretty hard on a situation that, you know, it's different when you're in there, man. And it's different when you're the guy cornering. So I tend to come to the defense of a lot of our guys like that, especially because I know him really well. And I know that, you know, maybe given a second chance or a different opportunity makes a different decision, but you know, we're being critical of people that are trying to make decisions on the fly on TV with all this pressure and to try to do the right thing. And, it's hard, it's tough, but you know, look, if we're going to sign up for this sport and we're going to be in the limelight and we're going to take all the compliments and all the praise and everything else, then there's no 50-50, or you have to take the criticism as well, right? Like, you just can't take one without the other. So you're going to get caught with some criticism. That's going to happen. You know, take it with a grain of salt and understand that, you know, some people don't know what they're talking about. And sometimes somebody tells you something that you're like, shit, maybe I got to be better in this regard, you know, but I just tend to kind of let it roll off my shoulders. Like, hey, I'll try better next time, you know, and just move on. That's about it for me.
Yeah, I love that answer. Refs, judges, coaches, some heat that comes at you guys, you know. And sometimes it's warranted, but all it is a mistake. It's unfortunate it happened when it happened. Think about Pete Carroll when he didn't give the ball to Marshawn Lynch, but he threw. The guy intercepted it, but that doesn't take away that he's won a national champ or a couple national championships.
Yeah. Super Bowl.
And he's been one of the top coaches of all time. He'll probably be on a Hall of Fame. He just made a mistake. You know what I mean? But he's been rehired. I think the Seahawks are 4-0. Things are going great. It was just a mistake. It doesn't mean that they're a bad coach, a bad ref, a bad judge. This sport's a little bit different, but I think people are now starting to mature and realize that they have footing in this sport. Mark Montoya is a great coach, you know, but – I think we all helped each other a lot through social media, and we're not a multi-billion dollar, except for the UFC part. We're not a multi-billion dollar sport. Coaches aren't getting $10 million a year where they can shake it off, you know, when they get back in their fancy car or go to their mansion, you know, or whatever. I mean, we're all grinding the next day. That's right. What makes it a little bit tough. But I was really glad to hear that, and I'm glad that you guys are out there supporting each other, because I think that's important. The sport's still in the leather helmet stages in some regards, even though we're 27 years old, going on 28. But that was a great answer, Eric. I'm glad you feel that way. All right. The Fight Game. Tell me about that. I was on your social media, and it looks like there's a series featuring you. What's it all about? Tell the audience.
Well, so we have a guy who comes in. His name's Andrew. He does the Fight Game series. He actually does a lot of like little mini series for he pretty much did like all the Vegas fight scene. So it's going to be about 15, 20 minutes, little segments on each guy here that he kind of hand selected, as well as I know he did some guys over at Syndicate. So Mike Pyle and Gunnarsson and those guys over there as well. So it's nothing too crazy. I think it's just a little YouTube clip or 15 minute kind of little bio. Hey, what got you into the sport? But another little cool side that he did was he talked to a lot of the guys that were very connected with Coach Fallis, and he's going to do a Fallis little documentary with everybody that had been coached by him or knew him for a long time. And so I'm looking forward to that, man. It's time to get something out there for Fallis, and you know, it'd be good.
Well, I'll tell you what, that little cover he did, it looked top notch. It looked like something that ESPN's going to unveil.
Yeah,
for sure. Shout out to him. I'll be checking it out because it looked really like raw, you know?
Yeah, didn't it?
Cool gym feel. And I was glad that they obviously featured you because you've made tremendous strides in the sport, man.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go through your roster of guys. Francis Ngannou, we know he's next for Miocic. What have you heard? What can you share with us? 2020, let's start with that. Is it going to happen in 2020 or are we looking more like 2021?
We're hoping so, and that's obviously what we're pushing on our end. I know that's what the UFC wants as well. They want to get that the December card lined up and make it Stipe and Francis, but you know, it's obviously going to be on Stipe's end as well. So right now we're just training, man. He's since he's been back home from Cameroon, the guy hasn't missed a day. You know, as a matter of fact, like I don't even know if I want to bring it up, but you know, I happened to be going through Lifetime by the house, and as I was leaving, I look over and I see just Francis running on the treadmill on a Sunday, you know, and go over and say hi. He's been on the treadmill for 35 minutes straight. There's just sweat everywhere. You know, the guy's working hard, and that really made me proud. Like, it's a Sunday. He doesn't need to be in there. He could take the day off. And then he just got this mindset now, man, where he's just grinding his ass off. And I'm so proud of the guy because, you know, he has a goal and he's going to do whatever the hell it takes to achieve it.
I'm just curious. What happens if the sign says 30 minutes max? He's on 35 and somebody walks up and goes, I'm next. Come on, man.
Just leave him alone, man. Just leave him alone. But hey, I'll tell you what, Lifetime, man, they're brave over there. They're brave.
Jeez, man. Anybody that hasn't seen Eric walk into the Extreme Couture gym and you'll see the Vanilla Gorilla. I mean, massive dude, played high school football, linebacker, tight end, big cat. He could sort anyone out. Just ask that one guy at Mandalay Bay. But then he stands next to Francis when you guys do those picks. I mean, and he just looks like big brother taking little brother. Like, he looks like an eighth grader taking his kindergarten brother to school.
For sure.
I like the Toyo Tire commercial when he's like this. Like,
oh, yeah.
Such a teddy bear, but at the same time, good God. Like, I don't even know if he likes us, to be honest. He comes, he shakes your hand, but when he gives you that scowl, you're like, okay, whatever you want.
It's something else, man. And, you know, I was just telling Spong was in town, Tyrone Spong, and then I was talking about when he fought Jarzinho. And, like, we got in the corridor to go walk, and then, like, Jarzinho is facing forward and then, like, looks over and sees Francis and then looks back and then looks at him again. And it was, like, one of those I've never seen a guy just, like, holy shit, this dude's huge. You know, I'm about to fight this guy, you know. So, yeah, it was different, man. I'll tell you what, being around that guy is different, that's for sure.
And Jarzinho's all of about 6'3 or 6'4 too, right? He's a pretty big cat.
He's a big dude. I think he might be a little – he's listed as 6'4", and he's not because Francis towers over him. And Francis is listed as 6'4", but he might even be a little bit taller than that. So I think there's a little bit of size discrepancy on the measuring tape there.
Yeah. All right. So now let me ask you about Dan Ige. You know, he had a great run, took a loss. You know, how do you rebuild him? Because we've obviously seen that he's got a very well rounded game. I mean, he just picked up striking from his first fight where I was like, ooh, he's got to work on his striking, to basically outstriking Barbosa at times, you know. But most of the time, that guy's really come around. A lot of people have gravitated to him. He took that loss now to Cater. What do you think will be next in his next run? What do you think will be the main focus to get this guy to championship level?
Well, for me, it was like, hey, let's take a couple days off. We don't need to fight every weekend. So, you know, here's the thing with Dan is we've worked so hard together with the gym, with, you know, between individual coaches to get him to where he's at today. And he was able to show that, to showcase that in his last, you know, he won six in a row. And the fight with Calvin, I actually left that fight very happy. You know, obviously you don't want to lose, and but the performance that he had, the grittiness, the, you know, the 5-round experience, the 25 minutes in the cage, all that was very important for us. And you know, I don't think we just got like just handed to us. You know, we were hanging in there. There was little things that we could have done better, that we should have done better, that ultimately could have swung the rounds our way. You know, and like we talked about with Goes and Tyson, we sat and kind of went over round by round. But I left there very optimistic on what we need to do. And, you know, I think things like that, losses like that versus Calvin are sometimes things that we need. The Julio Arce fight, for example, you know, it was our first fight in the UFC and we got beat. We needed that. That was a fight. That was a loss that we needed. And that took us back to the drawing board, made us all accountable. And, you know, we reeled off six in a row. So I'm looking forward to what's in the future for Dan. Obviously, this featherweight division is just freaking stacked, man. So you can literally interchange anybody in that top 10 in that division. I can see a lot of these guys making a run and being champs. So for me right now, you know, him and his wife are pregnant. I told him, let's work on just skill building, taking our time. He's nursing a couple injuries. And, you know, just being in the gym and working, and that's about it right now. Let's let the body heal up. You had a good run for this year. Even if he decides to fight by the end of 2020, I'd be okay with that as well.
All right. We're running a little close on time here, and you're very gracious with your time. I didn't realize we've had you on this long. So let's do this. I know you've been a head coach to like fighters like Jessica Ai. I know you've been in the corner kind of like as an assistant coach to like a Joseph Benavidez. I've even seen you substitute coach, like in the case of Jared Gordon. But just tell me who's kind of next, who are you working with, and what can we see here in 2020? Unless the list is forever, maybe focus on a few fighters here.
No, I could jam through them. So right now we have Ty Gwarder. He just took another fight in Bellator. He signed a fight October 29th. So I'll be out there with him. We're pushing to get Jeremy Kennedy on that same card because he just signed with Bellator. So it'd be nice to get two guys out there at once. Then I'll be back home. I'll be here to corner Ian Heinisch November 7th, as well as Gustavo Lopez. And then I think Claudia. Claudia is kind of always in and out, but it sounds like I'll be there to help Claudia for November. And then end of November, I'll have Roman Dalaliz. That's November 21st. So we're staying busy, man. November's going to be packed for me.
Yeah. And I can't forget him because I love that kid. Keith Lee also is coming off a big win. You've been with him for a while. Hell, I think he traveled all the way to Morocco once to corner him.
Yeah.
So you guys are pretty much sidekicks there. So anyway, shout out to him.
Yeah. Proud papa too. Just had a baby.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Birthday yesterday, and he had a baby. A couple days after his win in Bellator, he got home and then they had the baby. So it worked out perfect. He calls me. He's like, Coach, they have a fight. But it's like 2 days before our due date. And I was like, look, man, if you can get that fight in and be there for your kid's birth and make a little bit of money, I go, you know, that's the ultimate goal. But if she pops and has this baby while you're on the road, you're in big trouble, man.
I like how like 3 minutes ago, Eric was like, oh, Ben and his wife are pregnant, you know, using the whole plural thing. And listen, and now he's like, he pops while you're gone. All of a sudden he goes in the locker room, Eric. Anyway, just busting balls, Big E.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, keep your Sundays open, man. I saw somebody already telling Dan that you should be the godfather. So I imagine that.
I'd be honored, man.
I call sometime. But anyway, we won't put people on the spot. Hey, listen, man, great catching up with you. It was great seeing you a couple weeks ago. We hadn't seen you in a while.
Yeah.
But a lot of things are really loosening up.
I guess we'll be in there a lot more often, but this catch-up meant a lot to us, so thank you very much. This is actually our first sportscaster on a Monday, so it was great to kick things off with a guy like yourself, man. One of the top coaches in the game, managing the most famous gym in the world, Extreme Couture.
I appreciate you guys. I miss you a ton. Hey, I'll be coaching tonight, so if you guys can get by, come see me.
Oh, you're doing the Vince Lombardi?
Yeah, woo! We're going to get after it today.
Man, that's an intense one, man. They'll probably go 15 minutes extra, too, just because I said it. All right, thanks, yes, Coach.
All right, good to see you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too.
Later.
Later. That is Coach Eric Nixick. Goes. He does not play around on those Mondays, right? I call him Lombardi because it's almost like that old school coach that has the whistle and he's just yelling and yelling and yelling.
I think we're at fault sometimes too, because I think if we're there, it adds like another 5 to 10 minutes of just kind of smirking and, hey, did you see that? Like, so yeah, we might be at fault some of that.
If we're there, I think he tacks on the 15 minutes because he really wants the word to spread that on Mondays he don't play. So it's almost like the other fighters are like, God, I hope those two bozos from Junkie Radio don't show. But one time anyway, we're running out of time here, and I want to explain something. So, folks, it came together at the last minute, and obviously we're going to promote it more often and, sorry, with more of a lead-in than to just pop up on your screen on a Monday. So we're going to be here on Mondays and Thursdays on Sportscaster, and our Wednesday show is going bye-bye. Now, we are going to be here on Wednesday because we want to at least tell that audience live, hey, we're going bye-bye, but we're going to do Mondays and Thursdays now, so you'll get us twice a week versus one time a week on Sportscaster. So that's good news. It's just that Wednesdays won't be there. Now, I don't want to jinx it, but we're going to fight to maybe get back that Wednesday too, and maybe we'll be with you guys Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. But for now, it's Mondays and Thursdays, Junkie Radio, 1 hour long, at least one guest, sometimes maybe two. But we kind of use that long form of interviewing because, as you saw, there was a lot to discuss here with Eric. Back in our Sirius satellite days, I mean, you got to churn them out a lot more quicker. And then as soon as they're gone, you're like, you know, and you realize you didn't get to a lot of stuff. That's why we used to bring in the fighters and the coaches and the notables to co-host for 2 hours. Then we covered it all, including a street fight story. But those days are behind us, and right now we're very happy here on Sportscaster. There was a couple of Bellator events, and I think what we're going to do is we'll just cover them on Thursday. That way we give you the proper results. As you know, Paul Daly did not fight this weekend. That was a whole mess. But they did, you know, have a couple of events, and we'll cover all that properly when we come here on Thursday. Goes, any final words here before we bounce?
Yeah, I mean, that this show will have a little bit of an evolution as we figure out what the best ways are to do it. Because remember, you still catch the show on podcast as well. That's why you see us take a little 10-second break here and there. It's just to kind of fulfill some of the things that we do on that side. But
oh yeah, good that you brought that up.
What's that?
That's good that you brought that up. In case people were looking at the 10 seconds going, what's going on? That's us basically where we're filling in the blanks. And like Go says, we're evolving.
Yeah, but, you know, another thing, too, is as the pandemic starts to go away, maybe we could start doing this from Mandalay Bay again, you know, and that's where, like George said, we can bring in co-hosts for the whole show. But until then, yeah, at least one guest and maybe try and get a couple here and there. But I think it's going to be really fun. And there's probably ways where we can even involve you guys, where you guys can come in and ask questions. So technology is pretty crazy. So we'll see how we can figure all that out.
Yeah. So thank you again to USA Today Sports and Sportscaster for coming together and making this happen. And I guess we'll see you all on Thursday. Remember to keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. MMAJunkie.com, great website, 5-time winners of the World MMA Awards. Also, we have an app that's free and available on all tablets and smartphones. So check it out. You got all your info there in the palm of your hand. If you're just old school and don't have a desktop or a laptop or nowhere near, you always got your phone with you, right? That app will answer all of your questions. Ghost can be followed on social media, Instagram and Twitter. He's at the Ghost, THEGOZE. I'm at MMA Junkie George. And this show, MMA Junkie Radio, at MMA Junkie Radio, same thing, Twitter and Instagram. Follow us there. All right, folks.
Enjoy your Monday. Go out there and be a champion.